This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hej och välkomna till ett nytt avsnitt av Vinpratarna, där vi idag ska få träffa ingen mindre än Silvia Altare, vinmakare på legendariska Piemonte-egendomen Elio Altare. Hennes pappa Elio ingick i det här gänget som kallade sig för The Barolo Boys och gjorde revolt mot gamla traditionella vinmakningsregler och började leka med barriker och andra mer moderna metoder. Och Silvia själv har jobbat i företaget på heltid sedan 2003. Och i den här intervjun får vi höra henne berätta både om vad som händer i Piemonte i stort och självklart också med egendomen Altare. Intressant och högenergisk person det här, Silvia Altare. Så håll till godo, trevlig lyssning. Welcome to Vinpratarna, Silvia Altare.
Thank you, and welcome to Sweden. Yeah.
We're so happy that you're here.
Yeah.
Grazie.
Yeah.
So you just arrived from the airport?
Fresh, maybe not so fresh, but yeah, just arrived from the airport. Yeah, I left a few hours ago.
You left 2 o'clock?
2.30, left La Morra, and I wanted to make sure I was here on time, so I left pretty early.
Yeah, okay.
I made it fine.
Happy.
And of course, you're from the main Elio Altare?
Yeah, that's my dad.
Yes.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit? For people, I mean, Altare is quite well known in Sweden, I would say. But anyway, just tell us a little bit about the history of the domain.
Well, thank you. I guess Barolo is very well known these days anywhere. You can find Barolo wine anywhere in the world. It wasn't like that just 30 years ago. And definitely the name Elio Altare, Elio is my dad, but the brand Elio, I can call it brand these days.
Ah.
But the winery pops up because of the history we have. And if we go back a few hundred years, the history of my family is very similar to most of the wine families of the region. So farmers, grape growers, my grandparents or my ancestors, I could say, you know, had hazelnut trees, fruit trees, cattle, and they sold most of their grapes to the negociant, to the cooperatives. Mm-hmm. My grandfather, Giovanni, was the first one to bottle wine. First Altare wine goes back to 1950, which I still have at the winery. I have a very good library.
Oh, cool.
Fantastic.
Yeah, going back to the 50s. But the big changes happened in the 70s when my dad, crazy guy, decided to physically take over. So obviously it was a natural decision because he was the man of the family, he was the kid, and he was going to work there. But my dad is pretty stubborn, and it happens that he was the only one in his family that got an education. But when I say education, I don't mean college or school. He just started reading books. He was very curious. Mm-hmm. And my dad went to third grade, I mean elementary. But at least he knew how to read.
Mm.
My grandparents didn't even know how to read or sign. My grandparents' documents were signed with an X. I'm not joking. They were born in the early 1900s. Yeah. So my dad was pretty curious, started reading and started doing researches about wine regions in the world, and he found out that outside La Morra, hey, they were making wine. He didn't know that. Not just that there was wine in Barbaresco, but there was wine outside on the other side of the Alps.
Yeah.
France, Switzerland, Germany, Austria. So my dad decided to be adventurous and explore, and when he told his father for the first time, And this is funny, it sounds like forever ago, but in 1976. So yeah. My dad was 26 years old. He told his parents, look, I want to go to France. And his parents were like, don't go. This is so far. Well, 1 hour, you cross the Alps, 4 hours and a half, so 5 hours and a half here in Burgundy. My dad decided to go visit because he was eager to learn, to see the people he was reading about in his books. And this is, I'm going to say, the beginning of the revolution that we had in my family, and that slowly exploded and expanded to the region. So what happened, and I can definitely say that my dad has been one of the first to take the decision to be adventurous, and not just to visit, but to start experimenting, changing things in the vineyards, in the cellar. And what happened with those kids is that they were mostly eager to have a better life. It wasn't just, oh, I'm going to make a different wine just because I'm crazy. But there was a combination of a lot of things. To be a farmer back then was a shame. And back then means only in the late 70s. So it was a shame. You couldn't even find a wife if you were a farmer. I mean, you stink. You have grapes and you sell stinky Barolo. Today, it's cool to be a farmer, right? I'm here in Sweden doing a podcast. So how cool is it? But, you know, so those kids, because my father was mid-20s and some of his buddies were even younger, they wanted to be like those guys they've been reading about. When my dad met for the first time Hubert de Villene, Romanée Conti, or Monsieur Lafarge, those guys were rock stars already.
Yeah.
And he was like, I want to be like them. Why I have to be stinky, can't find a wife, and those guys are rock stars. So literally, the revolution started by, I'm going to say, copying. By emulating, like nothing was invented. I mean, the Romans planted vineyards in the region where we live 2,000 years ago. So nobody created and invented anything, but definitely a different approach was used to the winemaking, to the vineyards managing. And we can get deeper into this, but sometimes the revolution of Barolo is just referred to one thing, which is barrels. Yeah. Barrique, it's used as a little, you know, as almost like as the excuse. The revolution is that.
It's easy.
Yeah, it's easy to just use one thing, but it was a much broader picture. And so the history of Altare, yes, it's a history of hundreds of years of farming, but the real history started with my dad, which is only really 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's known as one of the rebels, one of the Barolo boys. That's the name of the group he started with his buddies, and they're all there, and now it's the new generation taking over.
Yeah. So when he came back from his travels and came back to La Mora, what was the first changes? I mean, this happened gradually.
Gradually, absolutely. But what was the first thing? My dad always says he noticed how the vineyards were managing in a different way. They were doing green harvest. Mm-hmm. Back home, my grandfather was just hoping to make more grapes. The more he had, the more he could sell, the more money would come home. So he decided to do his first green harvest back in the fall of 76, and my grandfather had his first heart attack because he felt like, you're wasting what God gives you. You're going to be punished. You're going to hell. So green harvest, my dad started being organic back then already also. So already, we've been organic from now since 40 years. Because of the necessity of making a lot of grapes, producing a lot of chemicals were used. Chemicals, pesticides, fertilizers, and my dad stopped using them. Started using copper, sulfur, which you might argue they're metals, but depends on how much of it you use. We use cow manure still today. We have cows, so we make our own shit. We're very specific even about that. So farming, first thing that changed, because that's where everything starts from, vineyards.
Yeah.
And then in the cellar, my dad was shocked how those guys in France, and when I say those guys, I mean Angèle, Lafarge, Robert de Villene, they didn't have chickens shitting around the cellar or cows. My grandfather made wine within the animals in the stable. So the cellars were dirty. There was no running fresh water. There was no hot water. So my dad brought hot water in the cellar, which was a scandal because grandpa thought he was wasting money.
It's a hygiene.
And he pushed the chickens out. So you see, all these little things that make us laugh today, 40 years ago, that's why they call it revolution. Because what those guys brought is like almost like when the wheel was introduced to us. I mean, really? No chickens in the cellar?
Wow.
So it's a lot of little details, but the details brought us to where we are today, that I'm having a podcast in Stockholm when 40 years ago my father couldn't find a wife because he was a farmer.
But was he after to also change sort of the the taste, the profile of the wine, or was that the idea, or was it just to make these changes with the hygiene and all that, and see what happened, or did he have a specific, we are here, I want to do that?
Obviously, that's what you need. You need a goal. You need a target. And the target was to make clean wines, accessible wines, wines that you would have not had to wait 25 years before you would drink them. That's the joke we always use when people visit the winery, and I show them the library, and I have wines from the 50s and the 60s from my grandparents, and they say, oh my God, you drink these wines? And I'm like, ha, they're still tough to drink today. But let's say my grandfather wasn't the most exciting winemaker, but his wines were just very rough, and the aging was done in these big botti, in these big vats that were, I don't know, 100 years old, and nobody ever washed. So they were stinky, reduced, high tannins, dry. It's just a combination of a lot of things that pushed my dad and his friends, not just to change things, but the goal was to have a wine that was drinkable, and they succeeded on that. With, you know, you make mistakes along the way when you don't know. Any business. So my father and his friends, when I say his friends, I mean Domenico Clerico, Voerzio, Scavino, Sandrone. I grew up with these guys when I was a kid. I remember saying they would gather together, have dinners, you know, at my house. We would go to someone else's house, and they would taste each other's wines blind, and they would say, geez, you made some terrible wine. So they made mistakes. Yeah. Too much oak, too much concentration, too much whatever. And then everyone found their path. Normal. That's normal.
And you started working full-time 2003?
Yes. I was working before illegally with no salary. That's why it doesn't count.
Okay.
Family business. That's how it is.
Yeah.
And what have you brought into the winemaking? And what has happened since you?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, we have to start with the point that I'm in a very lucky position where I like the wines we make. My dad didn't like his father's wines. He didn't like what he had. I like what we have, and there's always, obviously, a margin of improvement. I'm not sitting there boring, not doing anything. But, you know, there's always little details. Mm. I'm not going to change the fact that we're organic and we try to make clean wines and approachable wines. But there's always equipment that you can change. I mean, for example, new crushing machines, new pumps. I haven't used the idea that we still only age in barriques because so far I'm happy with that. Ask me this question in 10 years. Maybe in 10 years I'm going to use big botti or egg-shaped concrete tanks.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I've been experimenting with some wines like the handy-stamped Uno per Uno Barolo,
where
the grapes is and are handy-stamped. One thing, it's funny, I can say, probably because I'm a woman, I'm definitely more organized than my dad. So my dad would lose tools and break things. And with us, we don't lose things anymore. Things don't break him. So just stupid things like that. But that's just a funny side. But winemaking-wise, not much has changed, but because I'm happy with what we have.
Yeah, I get it.
And that's a fantastic position to be in.
Definitely. I'm super lucky. But, you know, and it's also hard. I'm on the edge because people have a lot of expectations.
Yeah.
And they can't wait for you to fail so they can gossip and tell bad things. But also a lot of expectation because they want to hear what you've changed.
Sure.
So I'm like, well, so far...
Nothing.
People tell me actually wines taste different. Mm-hmm. But I say I haven't changed. So I guess just the fact that I'm there, I have a different staff, and I have bought different equipment, and maybe... You know, just a different way of doing. I don't know what it could be, but people tell us the wines are different.
Mm.
But from my point of view, I don't see that much has changed. We always joke and say that when we made good wines, I have a good team, great Altata staff. When it's a bad vintage, it's my dad's fault. It's his name on the label, so it's your fault, Elio.
Oh, poor dad.
But how many, can you tell us, how many hectares do you have and where do you have it? And
we're tiny, tiny. So 10 hectares. Family property is 6. We lease about 4. Maybe I'm going to say this sounds a little sad to say, but when it was time to buy land 20 years ago, maybe my dad didn't know if me or my sister would have worked at the winery. Actually, my sister left, so they didn't invest and bought land. Today that I wished he had bought, I cannot afford to buy land.
No.
So I'm still renting 4 hectares, and the vineyards are spread out. Mostly we're based in La Morra, so most of the vineyards are in La Morra. We have some land in Monforte, Barolo, Castiglione Faletto, Serra Lunga. So we're actually kind of spread out on all the communes, which is a good thing because you blend the soils and the textures. 10 hectares gives us about 60,000 bottles average, 70, 50, that's where you work with. And my staff is huge. I work with 6 people, big company. And right now that I'm here, I'm like already sweating, thinking about when I'll call home and they're going to tell me something has to be fixed or it's broken. They don't know how to do something.
It's nice to have a tight team.
We're super tight. I always joke that I'm married with 6 guys. they have 2 wives because they have their wives plus me because they have to be with me non-stop from March to December. Now we're getting to harvest time. When I get home on Sunday, I'm gonna guess beginning of next week, that's when we start Dolcetto. And when harvest starts, 20 hours a day, 15 hours a day, don't ask me for a day off, sorry.
No,
you're so with me until
nice you're
November.
In Stockholm now.
Oh, this is kind of holiday for me, yes. My guys are getting ready for harvest, yeah.
But how big percentage, how much is Nebbiolo, how much is Dolcetto, Barbera?
Good question. I want to say half of the production is still entry-level wines. Dolcetto, Barbera, Nebbiolo. Mm. The simpler wines. Mm. I'm going to say something maybe not very appropriate, but it's the cash flow of the winery. It's what you make.
Yeah,
and you
bread and butter.
Yeah, easy, fast sells. And then so the other half of the production is Barolo. Mm. We have a Barolo Base, so a blend of vineyards, a village, a Barolo Arborina, Barolo Canubi, which is a rented vineyard in Canubi, so Barolo town, Ceretta, which we rented for almost for 15 years, and I was able to buy a couple years ago. And then I started making Uno per Uno in 2010. So 5 Barolo labels and a few Lange wines.
Yeah.
And the Lange wines have fantasy names, Larigi, Giarborina, La Villa. And these are probably still the heritage I have from my dad from the revolution of the Barolo boys, because these are still the only wines where we make 100% new oak.
Okay.
Yeah, the other wines now, it's mostly used wood, half and half. But the Lange wines is literally still the heritage from the revolution of Barolo.
Yeah.
And one last wine that kind of doesn't fit because it's a blend, but it's called L'Insieme, which is I'm very fond of that wine, mostly because of what it symbolizes. It's a together of varieties, but it's a wine club of friends making that wine. It's a charity wine. So it's only 1,000 bottles of that wine, and it's actually mostly Cabernet, Syrah, Petit Verdot. I don't want to be famous for Cabernet, Syrah, Petit Verdot. I have like 5 rows of that, but the symbol, what it symbolizes is pretty easy. So I have 12 labels actually in the portfolio.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Can we just go back a little bit? Because you said, how was it growing up in La Mora? Because you talked a little bit about your dad meeting all his famous, today very famous winemakers. How was it?
Well, as a kid, well, my parents were never put pressure on me and my sister. Like, they never said, oh, you have to be in the wine business. They said you could be a chef, an architect, whatever. My sister moved to Germany. She prefers beer and sausages, I guess. So, married.
Still quite close.
See, yeah, she drives 9 hours. She can drive. She's our, between kids, she's got three now. She sells wine for us. So she's supposed to be our sales manager.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I grew up into this business, which is, like in any family business, you need to have the passion. You can just be, oh, Monday to Friday, goodbye, see you next week. No. Sometimes, again, like harvest time, 20 hours a day. So I grew up in a very passionate environment, and not easy being a woman. Now it's easier. Mm. Now there's a lot of women winemakers. Even just when I started early 2000, I felt
alone.
Mm-hmm.
There's one women I look at as my idol. She was the only Barolo girl in the Barolo boys group, which is Chiara Boschis from Pira. And I look at her as my superhero. I got her picture on my fridge every morning. I say, Chiara, give me the inspiration. Because she's super strong. She's like driving the tractor, racking wine, and putting makeup and flying to New York. That's how I wanted to be when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I do that. So just so you know, I left 2:30 this morning, but yesterday I was labeling all day. So today I'm like, here in Stockholm. So, but there was no pressure, but there was also some pressure. So, and it's a very man-ish, very physical business. It's not just like, romantic making wine. No.
It's hard labor.
It is. People think it's just a romantic. No. There's a lot more behind.
But before early 2000, what did you do then? I mean, you said you worked some part-time in the winery as well.
Yeah, so I mean, as a kid, you always helped. Yeah. But I graduated in economics in Torino. So I'm actually, what I fixed at the winery was the numbers. My dad was a terrible number and losing a lot of money. So I'm a pretty good accountant. And but I also did some, I got some experience. I worked in California, I worked in Australia, and I worked in Burgundy.
Oh, okay.
And I traveled, and at some point, I officially started working in 2003, because that's when my parents said, okay, you're done with traveling? You want to come home and work? Fun is over. So I'm like, okay, now I'm truly inspired. I'm coming home. Yeah, let's go.
Should we try the wine that we have in front of us?
Yeah, let's do it. And you can
we just open it, and it's been traveling a bit as
it's
well.
It's been shaken in the suitcase, and I brought a bottle of the Barolo Uno per Uno 2012. So Uno per Uno, it's not a vineyard name. It's a fantasy name.
Mm.
And
one by one. One by one,
yeah. And the reason why we called it Uno per Uno, it's because the berries are pulled by hand one by one instead of crushing them into the stemmer, The grapes are harvested. We take them home. You sit on a chair after 20 hours of work, or maybe 15 or whatever, and you happily pull the berries one by one. The idea was to, I don't know, to achieve the most pure ingredients ever to make a wine. So I'm not going to say this is the best wine of the world. Again, we make mistakes. This is only the third vintage.
Okay.
So 2010 was the first one. But the ingredients to make this wine are the purest. There's no stems, no bugs, no leaves, no spiders. Because guess what? When you crush grapes, there's a lot of shit in those buckets.
It's a lovely texture to the wine.
So people, when they ask me, do you make vegan wine? I'm like, God. Spiders-ish, bugs. So the idea was to achieve the purity of Nebbiolo and see how, to check if Nebbiolo really is that tannic as people describe it. And
so this is your own project.
Well, the story is, I'll have to tell you because it's kind of funny. First harvest was 2010. I'm going to say that it was back in 2009, the year before that harvest. We had a dinner at my house with my family and a bunch of friends. And we were all a little bit, you know, drunk. And at the end of the dinner, my father pulled a bottle of our Lange Larigi, which is the Barbera we make in New Oak, 86. 86 was average vintage for Piemonte. A lot of hail was bad. And we were joking with my father, you pull, you know, the bad wine at the end when everyone is drunk. And it's because I never had that wine before. We only had 12 bottles left in the library.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we popped the cork and we tasted this wine. Everyone was like silent and we're like, oh my God, this is good. How did you make good wine out of a shitty, difficult vintage.
Yeah.
And my father was like, you know, the grapes were so ugly that I harvested everything, and then I hired some people to just pull the good berries out of the bad grapes. Oh. And so instead of making the usual 7-8 barrels, I only made 2. So he made 600 bottles. And those 600 bottles of La Rigi 86, beautiful. I never had that. So, but I was so drunk that night, I was like, I want to do this too. But that was it. I was drunk, I forgot.
Yeah.
Then harvest came, 2010. My father said, do you remember you said that? And I'm like, no. Do you want to try it? And I thought with my staff, with my guys, I'm like, sure. 2010 is a beautiful vintage. Mm. And I'm like, well, there won't be much selection to be done because grapes are already perfect. But let's try it. But then you realize that even if it's a perfect harvest, you still have some ugly berries. Mm-hmm. And you shake the grape and, you know, the spiders fall off and the bugs. And there's no leaves, no, you know, the little top part, the stems. So we decided to do it. But the first hour was kind of cool. After 2 hours, you're like, really? After 1 week, you're like, why did we think of this? So it's a very much labor-intense work. But the wine, it's super silky.
Yeah,
fantastic. Yeah, I'm not a good... You should do the description of the wine. I'm definitely not good at that. But the tannins are smooth and silky. And there's tannins, obviously, but velvety.
Very velvety and soft.
Very velvety. Yeah.
And very mature tannins. They're not green at all.
No.
They're very round and supple.
Absolutamente, sí. And this is taken from the vineyard. The grapes are sourced from the vineyard Arborina. So if you were tasting side by side Barolo Arborina 12 with this one, Arborina is just regularly, I'm going to say, crushed with the machine, it tastes completely different.
Mm. So, how would you say, is it mostly in the structure?
In the structure, the wine would be a little bit darker, and it's more tannic.
This is very approachable. I mean, it's
young.
A 12, but it's... drinks lovely right now.
So this teaches us a lesson that Nebbiolo is, yes, it's the variety of tannins, but the tannins come also from the stems that are left. And probably the bugs. We probably have a lot of vegan followers, so we should talk about this.
I'm sorry.
But definitely, they've invented some really cool machines now that almost do the job as a human eye and human fingers. They're just too expensive. I can't afford them now. There's a few wineries in Barolo that bought that machine now.
Okay.
And I've seen it. It's not as perfect as human eyes and human fingers, but it's pretty close to it. So everyone is trying to achieve that silkiness. Yeah.
How many bottles do you do, you said?
So
that one?
4 or 5 barrels. So that's 1,200, 1,500 bottles, depending. It takes a lot of time. And it's during harvest time when you're busy.
Mm.
And if I can, I'm not going to use a bad word. I'm just going to use the initial.
Okay.
So we had to decide for a name for this wine.
Yeah.
And we were like, I don't know. We don't want to call it Arborina by hand, Arborina number 2. People would be like, what is this? So then I thought maybe I'll call it, you know, fingerprint, because it's hand. Then fingerprint was already taken. Then I wanted to call it by hand, a mano, but that was already taken. And then we were like, at home, between my staff, we call that the F wine. Because like, we have to do that work. Again? So I thought, I'd call it the F wine. And my father's like, no. Really? It would really be cool now. So after a lot of thinking, we thought, uno per uno, one by one. Which wasn't taken yet, so registered
your place is still the F wine.
Oh, yeah, no, we call it the F wine.
What about maceration and maturation of that one? How do you
So
do
the
make it?
Maceration is slightly different than the usual Altare style, because since it takes so long to physically do that process, it takes about a week, while with the machine it would take 15 minutes. So there's some berries fermenting a week and some other berries fermenting 12 hours. So it's slightly long for Altare style, which is a week maceration, when usually it's like 4 to 5 days. But the aging, it's then again in barrique.
It's barrique.
It's out of 4 barrels, 1 is new and 3 are used, or 2 are new. It depends. But that's almost 20-30% new.
Yeah.
But the maceration action has to be different because of the time.
Yeah. It's beautiful wine. Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with the perfume, because it's very open and it's super floral. And
it is floral, yes. And
really
one thing I get a lot when we use this wine in blind tasting, and I don't know how to take this, but I get a lot, this taste and smells traditional. Like, have you changed style? I'm like, not really. But this action maybe makes the wine, well, probably the maceration makes the difference too.
Yeah.
Do you think the terms traditional, modern has been a little bit more blurred in the recent years? People, at least we don't talk about it so much.
No, anymore. It's over. Yeah. Because but this wine,
everybody uses the best ideas and what they believe in, and people are tired of labels. They just try to
Boxes don't work anymore. Absolutely, but this wine tastes and looks different than Altare style. Mm, so people are always like, "Ah, Silvio, you finally have changed." I'm like, "Nah, not really." But I definitely don't believe in dogmas in general, and in wine even less. So it itches me when people come to the winery or I have people talk to me and say, "Oh, you're modernist." Yeah, my dad was a modernist 40 years ago. Mm. Now I'm a contemporary modern,
a winemaker.
Right? Yeah, everyone. If you visit now wineries like, I mean, I'm going to say a super traditional name, Cavallotto, for example. Mm-hmm. Cavallotto has a lineup of rotary fermenters, but you still call Cavallotto a modernist. Mm-hmm. Mascarello still uses the big, botti, but some of them are made of French oak. So what?
Yeah. So it's concrete and stuff as well.
So we got to find out new adjectives. This is kind of boring to put us in boxes now. Yeah. We got to think about new things to talk about.
But are there any, if you talk about Piemonte in general or Barolo in general, are there any specific trends? I mean, people going towards biodynamic or anything exciting happening in the region, you would say?
Biodynamic is very hard where we live because of the weather. So it's kind of a challenge. And I see friends of mine losing all their crop because they're trying. Yeah. Organic, it's kind of normal these days. Mm-hmm. So it was very unusual 40 years ago when the revolution started. But if someone sprays today, you're just like pointing at that guy, you can see. So everyone is organic. What is changing? A lot of women into the business now.
That's good.
Women power for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow there was a trend of, going to barrels. Now it's a trend to go back to
Botti or concrete.
Mm. And my generation is very experimental. I see a lot of, concrete egg shape. I see amphoras now. So it's a continuous challenge. I don't see a mainstream, a main idea, but every winery has his own path. Mm. For me, where we're doing, I still believe in it. So I'm still following it.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's do this again in 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. Because what do you think? When do your wine drink best? I mean, this is beautiful now. How long should you keep it, in your opinion?
I have no experience. First time, but definitely Altare. It's a long lasting wine. Altare wines, my dad's wines. I can talk about the 70s and 80s because I still have all these bottles, and they're still beautiful if you store it well, temperature and right storage. It's always the same story. If you start with a good wine, it's going to be good also 20, 30 years. If you start with an okay wine, it's not going to get that much better. That was the problem with at least my grandfather's wines. I can generalize, but my grandpa was like, the wine now is arse dry and smells like chicken shit and it's acidic. Wait 25 years. Well, grandpa was wrong.
When you open some of your grandparents' wine, how do they taste today? Are they still very bready?
Well, it depends on the vintage. Some vintages, I guess, I'm going to say, I don't know if I can say it was lucky or it was just... Some wines are really good. Some others are really like, you didn't really clean anything back then. And it's just that the idea of his maceration was from September to basically November. It was 2 months, at least 3 months on the skins. But why was macerating so long? Because he had other things to do. He had to harvest apples and potatoes and whatever.
Yeah, it was convenient.
And then he would come and drain the juice. But the juice, the wine that came out was basically almost already brick color, had no fresh fruit, and it was super high acidity and dry tannins. And I cannot generalize because there were some great winemakers back then already. But my grandpa was definitely in the category of not the exciting ones. So you got to be lucky. But with the new generation, I think the quality is definitely stabilized. Mm. So it's almost hard to drink a bad wine today in Piemonte. You really have to search for it.
Mm. I think it's fantastic that you still have a library.
Oh, yes.
So for the next generation as well to be able to follow the name.
I have 10,000 bottles in the library.
I mean, that's a lot. It must be unusual for like a smaller domain in Piemonte because people needed cash flow.
Exactly, absolutely. So the idea of a library started with the generation that started traveling to France. Mm. My dad always says, I was going to these wineries and I would see this stack of old wines. And they were like, why are you keeping wine? Mm. And that's smart. You started.
Yeah, and because so today it's very rare when you talk to domains in Piedmont. It's like, no, we have nothing.
No, we have latest vintage, a lot of latest wine. Vintage.
The wines need some age. Absolutely. To
and
the full
since
potential.
A few years now, more than 10 years, we started to store wine for a late release. So I'm going to go, I haven't decided when I will release it, but I'm going back to 05s.
That's fantastic.
Which is not a lot. Yeah. A lot of time because we needed cash flow, as you said. Yeah. So from 05, I think we were more stable. So 05, maybe, you know, in 2020, I don't know. I'll release something.
Lovely.
So
that's a good idea.
Especially for restaurants.
Yes.
Very interesting to have more older vintages.
I mean, that's a great idea to also to get wines that you actually are ready to drink.
Yeah, and then they've been stored at the winery, right temperature in the dark and properly stored.
We usually have some like food recommendation or something. That do you have any particular traditional dishes that you love to cook with your wines or?
I am I claim to be a good cook. I don't know, but I love eating. So and in my family, in Italian blood runs pretty normal to be a good eater, a good cook. But definitely Piemonte food is based on carbohydrates and fat and meat.
The best things in life.
So if you're planning to visit Piemonte and you're vegan, you should think about it twice. If you're vegetarian, you might survive. Vegan is a little rough, but a nice pasta could be a pasta with ragu, meat sauce or ravioli, or just beef braised in wine. So Barolo, it's good with anything that has a little bit of power, obviously. Yeah. But a silky Barolo like this, even a light antipasto will be fine. A vitello tonnato, a carne cruda, doesn't have to be something rich, but it definitely will be maybe hard to pair with sushi. Piemonte food definitely is designed for the wine we have, and the wine we have is designed for the food.
Yeah. It's comfort food. We love it.
Definitely. I'm really a fan of dolcetto. Do you? What kind of? How would you describe your dolcetto? The taste profile, what are you after? What do you want to do there?
I'm happy we have a dolcetto fan. Because everyone talks about Barolo and never talks about... I love dolcetto. It's our everyday wine. I wish I could drink Barolo every day. We don't. Dolcetto, cold from the fridge, in an ice bucket. Mm. The best aperitivo ever. You have it with a panino, salad, and the best pairing in the world is pizza. Pizza and dolcetto, poof. Perfect. Mm-hmm. So we do make dolcetto, and people sometimes say, oh, it's so much effort in making that wine, and then it's cheap. Well, first of all, we like it, and it's a tradition of all our families, and again, it's the cash flow for the winery. But dolcetto is the first step for customers to approach tannins, to approach Nebbiolo, to approach, you know, Piemonte wines. So I'm a big fan of dolcetto, especially cold.
Cold.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. We are really struggling in Sweden because people generally want their red wine to be
a little bit warm.
But here we really ice bucket.
Oh yeah,
it's a good thing, especially for those fresh grape varieties.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're that's about it.
Good,
really, and lovely wine. Fun to taste that. Thanks for bringing it.
Well, if you don't know what to do in October, I have a chair for you. You can sit down and go, count the berries. At the beginning, all my friends have started coming and they're like, oh my God, this is so exciting. After 1 hour, Sylvia, put on some music. Can we smoke?
We can do a shout out. If anybody loves to pick grapes one by one, just send us an email.
Exactly.
And
we
beginning of October. Oh my guest.
Sylvia, thank you very much for coming and sharing your experiences and lovely wine.
Thank you for having me. Grazie mille. It was my pleasure.
And have a great rest of your stay in Sweden. Salute.
Cheers. Grazie.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.